Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello and welcome to the Gegen Pressing Podcast. My name is Stefan Binkowski and today I'm joined by Matt Ford and not Manu Vett. Manu is currently flying high over Iceland right now. That's not a euphemism or a cinema. Quite literally the case. He's a careful, safe cruising altitude on his way back to North America. Matt, we did discuss trying to get him on the show and record this while on his flight. He does have internet. He's capable of WhatsApping us, so he's still pestering us through the show. But I think we agreed that him talking about the Bundesliga for 45 minutes with people sitting either side of him on the plane was probably not that fair.
No, I don't know. I mean, I can imagine that the other Lufthansa passengers are probably desperate to hear what Manu's thoughts are on his Bundesliga weekend, but... Oh well, they'll have to tune into this afterwards, won't they?
Yeah, I mean, if they're on a Lufthansa flight from Frankfurt to America, chances are they probably know who Manu is, and they probably can't follow German football anyway, so they might appreciate it. But yeah, we decided against it. It's just me and you today, and we've got a lot to talk about. Obviously, we had the kind of very initial raw reaction mini show from yourself, Manu, and Seb Stafford-Bloor. Deeps in the depths of the Westfalenstadion. Really enjoyable listen. I can appreciate how hard it must have been as you guys were kind of veering out of the way of fire engines, it would seem.
Veering out of the way of fire engines. And also, I think I had to listen to it back as well because, with all due respect, I missed half of what Seb was saying, not because I didn't want to hear, but because I was literally sprinting back and forth, trying to get hold of the various press officers to somehow try and get hold of Diogo Upamecano for me, which they eventually did. It actually came off in the end. I managed to speak to him, so it did work. But it meant that I kept having to run away and leave Seb talking to Manu. So I had to listen to it back to hear what he actually said. So it was worth it. It was enjoyable.
Yeah. And, of course, Manu is obviously a freakishly tall man, so it's hard at the best of times to speak to him and hear what either of us are saying in a crowded, busy place. But we'll dive all into that and, you know, we'll get the reaction, get Matt's opinions, obviously, for being at the stadium, speaking to players afterwards, and we'll also touch on some other games this weekend as well, right after this break. The last of the major sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. All the hoops betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Matt, before we get into the result, and maybe break down the, you know, the tactics and the reaction from the players and coaches. I wanted to ask you specifically your opinion of what it was like being at the stadium. You know, it's very easy for us to talk about, and everyone who watched the game obviously saw what happened on the pitch, but what was your opinion off the pitch in terms of how the fans were? Manu mentioned how after that second goal went in, the stadium went very quiet. Did it feel like a tense atmosphere to you? Did it feel like, you know, do you think the fans maybe impacted on how Dortmund played in that game? Or, I mean, you obviously go to the stadium quite a lot, so I'm really interested in what you thought the fans made of the night.
Yeah, those two early goals were very much like a bucket of cold water being thrown, all over Borussia Dortmund's team, fans, coaching staff, the whole lot. There's actually quite a maybe not euphoria, maybe that's too far, but there's certainly a positive atmosphere before the game. I was at the ground very early, earlier than usual even, and I do always try and get there early because I try and pop behind the yellow wall to the Südtribüne where I know quite a few people, so I like to try and just, you know, spend half an hour having a chat with some of the hardcore supporters. You know, we're finding out what they're all thinking, what the atmosphere's like, hear about the latest away trips, what's gone on. And I think you get a good impression of how the club is ticking, or what the general, you know, the feeling is on the ground. So there's a lot of talk going on about Newcastle away, so everyone had stories to tell about that, and obviously that was, as we said before, one of Dortmund's best performance of the season. And as a result of that, the whole club, from team to fan base, and I think even to the media landscape around the club, had come back from Newcastle, really on a high. You know, the 3-3 draw at Frankfurt was interpreted as a continuation of that. You know, if anything, perhaps a point gained rather than two lost, certainly, given it was away from home, and, you know, Frankfurt have shown again this weekend how good a team they are. So the atmosphere was positive. There was a sense that everyone was very much behind Edin Terzic, who's he remains a very popular figure at the club. A sense of a team on the up, and that they can, given that they were unbeaten in the Bundesliga since the last game against Bayern Munich, that they could do something today. And obviously that changed very quickly. You could see the frustration on Edin Terzic's face after the first goal, and it did sort of permeate all the way through the stadium, this just collective unspoken feeling of, here we go again. And it was, I mean, such an unnecessary goal to concede as well, wasn't it? I mean, you can concede goals against Bayern Munich in all sorts of manners, but effectively a free header from a corner in the third minute, surely not. And that very much set the tone for the rest of the evening.
Yeah, it was really interesting because in the preview match, the preview podcast Manu and I did, we did talk about the way that Terzic seems more comfortable playing with this team, which is, you know, maybe a little more defensive. I keep using the word defensive and pragmatic, but it's almost like they like to keep the ball. They like to try and, work it into the opposing box rather than this kind of, you know, gung-ho, gegenpressing style of football. And I did kind of wonder on that show whether playing at home in this big fixture, the fans will almost demand that, you know, they throw caution to the wind and really have a go at it, which, you know, you see that in just about any major club. You know, obviously here in Scotland we see that a lot with Celtic and Rangers, where when they're playing at home in Europe they really should be playing defensively against better teams, but the fans demand better. We saw that with Galatasaray recently against Bayern Munich, where, you know, maybe a more composed performance would have probably allowed them to win that game, but, you know, the fans demanded full pelt for the full hour. Maybe you can even say the same at Manchester United recently, Matt, where, you know, the fans expect Man United to dominate, where they maybe have to be a bit more pragmatic these days with the players and the coach they got. And I do kind of wonder if that was the case here, where, you know, I was reading Edin Terzic's post-match comments to Sky, and he was saying, you know, we gave the ball away every four or five passes. Every four or five seconds, we lost the ball. We were constantly having to defend counter-attacks. We couldn't keep the ball. And I was struck in that kind of opening 20 minutes by just how high Dortmund were playing against Bayern and how often they were just kind of turned over and left chasing their own goal mouth. you know, most evidently through that second goal where Bayern were given the kind of space to just kind of run right through them from a counter-attack. Do you think the fact that they're playing at home in front of their own fans maybe influenced that a bit? And, you know, it almost kind of goaded the team to push up and really have a go at Bayern, where, you know, if it was the opposite fixture or it was a Champions League game, they would have probably been sitting much further deeper and maybe have been able to make it harder for Bayern to break them down.
Perhaps, but I mean, I disagree slightly in that Dortmund even did that. I think it might have benefited them had they taken that approach and been more been more determined with that sort of approach. And except from the game I saw, I don't think if Dortmund were influenced or carried along by expectation from an expectant home crowd to attack in a more reckless way, well, I mean, I think from a Dortmund point of view, fans would probably say, well, we wish they had done, because it certainly didn't seem like that. I thought they seemed extremely slow, extremely lethargic, scared in possession, which led to sloppiness, particularly in the build-up to the second goal where Bayern were then able to break, and that lack of pace in the middle was ruthlessly exposed. So yeah, I sort of wonder if a little bit more of that ruthless bite from a Dortmund point of view would actually have done them a lot better. Thought it was quite telling it's been mentioned quite a lot because it was caught on camera, the fact that Schlotterbeck and Upamecano were sharing a bit of a smile and a joke beforehand. Maybe it suggested that Dortmund were going into this game actually too complacently. Maybe having believed their own hype too much, that they are unbeaten and on a level pegging with Bayern. And I don't think it's a particularly good look. Obviously, we don't know the full story of what's gone on there, but it's not a good look to be sort of smiling at and choking around at the first corner when you're meant to be marking someone.
Yeah.
And particularly when the goal then goes in, so it's not a good look. I suspect that had Borussia Dortmund taken the more gung-ho Galatasaray against Bayern approach, it might have done them good, but yeah, they didn't, and paid the price.
Well, you said you got a chance to speak to Upamecano after the game. Did you get a moment to ask him what Schlotterbeck might have said to him at that point?
I did, yeah, and it's done the rounds quite a bit. He just said that Schlotterbeck spoke to him and said, "How you doing? Are you all right?" And Upamecano said, he replied, "Yeah, fine. How are you?" And then the corner came in and he bombed past him. Mm-hmm. It seems strange to me. I'm not sure why you would even engage in that sort of exchange. I don't know. I don't know if the two know each other. It just seemed odd to me. I mean, again, it's not necessarily a valid comparison, but if I'm marking someone at a corner on a Monday night, I don't really sort of say hello to them. I don't know. I'm not a professional footballer.
No, it's a fair point. It is one of those little kind of moments in a game where, like you said, if nothing had come of that corner, people wouldn't have noticed it really. And now that they have, we go back and guess retrospectively kind of take note of it. I thought it was a really fascinating game in that sense. And you're absolutely right. In terms of Dortmund, it felt to me more so than, you know, there's that old argument, you know, we're Bayern brilliant and we're Dortmund poor. And I think for the most part, without taking anything away from the Bayern performance, it felt to me like Dortmund did kind of implode a little bit. And, you know, I thought there's maybe an interesting comparison to the way that Bayern played Leverkusen at the start of the season, where, you know, they go ahead from very similar circumstances, really, where Harry Kane knocks in a free header at the back post and immediately everyone thinks, right, here come Bayern, they're going to burst the Leverkusen bubble and they're going to impose themselves. And it felt to me like the difference between Leverkusen that day and Dortmund on Saturday was that Leverkusen were able to kind of reimpose themselves on this game. They were able to still kind of fall back on some strong tactics. They were well drilled. They knew how to play their game. And despite going a goal behind to Bayern, they just slowly but surely just got back to doing what they could do best. And I think Dortmund just didn't really ever seem capable of doing that in this game. There's even a point, I think, in the second half where, you know, I think Adeyemi comes on, and for about 60 or 90 seconds, there's no one playing left wing because no one knows where they're supposed to be playing. And I think you see Marco Reus kind of barking orders to get someone to move over to the left. And obviously Terzic changes his entire formation in the second half to try and accommodate for the fact that Bayern keep pushing through the middle of the park. And it's these little kind of, you know, incremental things that obviously get exposed so, you know, ruthlessly when, you know, two teams at the top of the game play each other. We see this in the Champions League all the time where, you know, a semi-final tie can be defined by, you know, just a moment in time really between a super excellent player and just a very good player. And that felt like what was happening across the pitch in this game. You know, I feel like Dortmund's season to date has got a lot going for it. You know, it's easy to forget that despite losing to Bayern and dropping 2 points to Frankfurt, they're still actually 2 points better off now than they were last season. And, you know, we talked about unbeaten run, and we've given Dortmund a lot of credit for the way that they have, you know, in my opinion, gotten more out of the squad than you would probably expect. You know, you look at that back line, it's full of kind of, in my opinion, quite average players. Even the ones who are maybe highly touted, such as Schlotterbeck, are still, in my opinion, very much a work in progress. He's not the finished article by any means. And, you know, I think maybe that works from week to week, but then obviously when they come up against a team like Bayern, those small cracks maybe get more exposed. And yes, they were missing big players. You know, maybe Emre Can and Demba in midfield makes a completely different, or offer something completely different to Dortmund if you know that's their starting midfield rather than Sabitzer and Özcan. But it just felt like a game in which Bayern were able to kind of sucker punch them the same way that they did to Leverkusen. But unlike Leverkusen, who maybe man for man have a better starting 11 and have a player like Florian Wirtz who doesn't seem to get fazed by these big moments, unlike maybe some of Dortmund's players, Dortmund just kind of seemed to kind of recede into themselves throughout this match. And despite Terzic trying to shake things up at half time and make substitutions, it didn't feel like they ever got to play their style of football against Bayern.
I totally agree with the Leverkusen comparison. I think that's absolutely bang on. And Leverkusen, we'll get on to Leverkusen later when we talk about their game, but they showed again how they how they deal with setbacks, and how they also have a clear, well-drilled attacking identity and a set of attacking offensive tactics which they don't fall back on. They simply continue doing it because they know exactly what they're doing. And this again brings us back to some of the issues which were raised regarding Borussia Dortmund under Edin Terzic last season, where there were accusations and suggestions that, you know, that final difference maker in the final third, you know, that clear attacking philosophy, you know, and that is what separates the best from the rest. Defending in football is easier than attacking, but do you have these, you know, the well-drilled patterns running into pre-prepared spaces in order to drag defenders out of position, but in a pre-drilled way, because that's part of your attacking philosophy. That's the hardest thing to coach in modern football, and it's the coaches who demonstrate that attacking philosophy across Europe and globally who stand out from those who don't. Those suggestions were raised surrounding Terzic last season. I think he's maybe taken himself out of the firing line on that count this season by focusing more on having a very stable defence, and the series of 1-0 and 0-0 results that they've had this season, I think, is testimony to that. However, it remains the case that this Dortmund squad is, I think, player for player, not on the level of Bayer Leverkusen's starting 11. I think I'd probably agree with that. Certainly not on the level of Bayern Munich starting 11. And also certainly not comparable to the quality of Dortmund starting 11s in previous seasons when they've had Haaland, Bellingham, Sancho, yeah, and the like. And even with those players in the team, they never actually won the league. So, yeah, it, I think it all served to, you know, come back to that analogy with the bucket of cold water on the head, maybe just to bring Dortmund down to earth a little bit, just to remind them of where they stand as a club, where they stand as a squad, where Edin Terzic stands as a coach. I've been the first to suggest the progress he's been making this season. I think it's actually really fascinating to watch the progress he's making as a coach and, you know, making these steps, because he's still a relatively young coach in comparatively speaking. But yeah, this that result on Saturday certainly showed brought them back down to earth. But I think even despite all that, let's not take anything away from Bayern. I think that'd be remiss to ignore that they were extremely good. Their best performance of the season. They were ruthless. They were well drilled. Terzic said himself that they couldn't cope with Bayern's pace and, more importantly, accuracy of passing. Barely a pass went amiss. The way I think Seb mentioned it when we were talking in the mix zone afterwards, the chaos that Harry Kane causes by dropping into the positions that he does, sometimes as far back as halfway into his own half. And then you did that in the first minute in the build up to the corner that we were talking about. It comes from Harry Kane doing that. He drops deep, controls the ball, and plays in Musiala. And it's precisely that sort of levering Dortmund's defence out of position which creates that. And Terzic said before the game that they were going to try and deal with Kane collectively rather than man marking him. Didn't work. I mean, I'm not sure what the answer is to it. Kane's absolutely unplayable in that form. Leroy Sané, I mean, I know he's been on fire all season, but that was outstanding on Saturday. An absolute joy to watch. He was fantastic from start to finish, and he's popping up left and right and all over the place. For Konrad Leimer and Leon Goretzka in centre mid, for a centre mid partnership, which I don't think had actually started a game together before, they were fantastic and leagues above what Solly Özcan and Marcel Sabitzer had to offer. You can mention maybe would Emre Can have made a difference, not in terms of pace, no, maybe in terms of experience and positioning, maybe. Perhaps there was actually a shout to have started Felix Metscher in hindsight. Certainly brings slightly more Bellingham-ish qualities, if I can put it that way. Again, that's not me saying that Felix Metscher is the next Jude Bellingham, absolutely not, but certainly has a more comparable style of play, slightly more dynamic and a bit more pace in midfield. Perhaps that would have helped. Turned us away from Bayern, and I think the reactions from the Bayern camp, and especially Thomas Tuchel surrounding the game, I think showed it all, showed how much anger was in the Bayern squad. And I think if you don't mind me going into it a little bit, it's actually quite dramatic. I'm not sure to what extent people outside Germany maybe picked up on Thomas Tuchel's interviews pre-match and post-match, because he behaved very differently with the German media and with German Sky than he did with some of the English language broadcasters. And this all started in the week, obviously caused, I think, legitimately perhaps by the defeat to Saarbrücken in the week, obviously. And Thomas Tuchel has made no bones by saying there's no excuse for that. I mean, he totally expects and accepts criticism when they get knocked out by a Division 3 team. Absolutely fine. However, he took issue in particular with comments from Lothar Matthäus and Dietmar Hamann, obviously former Bayern players themselves, who said worse to the effect that they don't see any further development in this Bayern team under Thomas Tuchel. And he sort of laughed it off in the pre-match press conference on Thursday or Friday, whenever it was. And it seemed like a bit of a joke, nothing more, when he was said no further development, and he responded, "Oh, well, I don't see any further development from them either," and just laughed it off. And it was like, I think I thought as well at the time, well, no more than that, that's just a joke, fair play, good little counter. But then pre-match on the pitch in Dortmund, he was doing his pre-match interviews to Sky, where he kept referring to it, and he said, "Well, why don't you ask the experts? I don't want to interrupt you when you're talking to your experts, because they know." And he was like, okay, this has clearly wound him up. And then even post-match, obviously having won 4-0, he feels completely vindicated. And he was doing an interview with Lothar Matthäus saying, well, go on, tell me about the further development and keep discussing it. And then he went into the press conference, and in the press conference in Germany, the coaches start their press conference by giving a quick statement, about a minute or two, of a monologue, just describing the game. And Tuchel basically said, can I quote the experts? He said, for a team with no further development and with a bad relationship between coach and squad, that was okay, wasn't it? And I'll leave the rest to the experts. Over to you, Edin Terzic. And just left it at that. So he was clearly wound up, and he repeated it on six or seven occasions. Just a bit, maybe a bit of an insight into the mentality in the Bayern dressing room this week. They were clearly angry and up for it, and yeah, that's a dangerous combination. Clearly,
yeah. I think you know, obviously Tuchel has a right to respond to those things, but I think it also maybe shows, you know, you're almost like the lady doth protest too much sort of thing, where, you know, it's almost, you can tell that they've obviously hit a nerve there, or he's obviously feeling very quite vulnerable going into the game, because there's a big story as well in Germany ahead of the game. I think it was Kerry Howe reporting that, you know, players are kind of disenfranchised by Tuchel. Many of the first team players don't talk to him. They don't find out they're starting. He doesn't tell them that they're starting. It's other members of the club that speak to the players on his behalf, and there was this kind of hierarchy, and he's got his favourites and things like that. Add to that, as you mentioned, the pundits kind of blowing a lot of hot air around the place, and you know, you can understand why Tuchel would be under pressure, because, you know, I think there's a lot of Bayern fans who do seriously question whether the club have progressed in terms of player performances and you know, the development. I think there's one or two outstanding isolated figures who are different from that. For example, Leroy Sané's obviously come on leaps and bounds since Tuchel arrived at the club. That's not specific to Tuchel, of course, but he hasn't gone the way of his development, of course. Harry Kane started very well, for example, too. But to lose a cup game and then go into the Der Klassiker, I think just about any Bayern manager would probably be under pressure to make sure they won that game, because, you know, one defeat in Munich is a problem, but two defeats in a row is just a downright disaster. That's just the way the Bayern Munich are, really. And yeah, I would be surprised if Tuchel did go into that game thinking, I really need to get a result here or else, you know, I'll be feeling the heat. But then, of course, that's one aspect. But also another aspect is probably Tuchel, who could probably rightfully say, look, maybe a bit like Terzic is, I'm working with a squad here that has obvious holes in it, has obvious flaws. We didn't get players in the positions that needed filled in the summer. Not entirely sure whose fault that is. Maybe Tuchel's fault in particular as well, if he took a more hands-on approach to the transfer policies. But, you know, there's been that issue with number six, right back, and maybe even goalkeeper going forward, that just weren't dealt with at all in the summer. So I can understand Tuchel's concerns there, and maybe he would argue that, you know, he's doing the best that he can with the players that he's got. And yeah, they certainly did that. I want to kind of hone in actually on that midfield, because I feel like that's such a fascinating kind of, you know, consequence of this game and that performance. Harry Kane, absolute standing, and especially in the second half, every time he picked up the ball in that pocket, you kind of, if you're a Dortmund fan, you just kind of hold your breath, because you know something's about to happen. He's about to set someone off to score a goal. Leroy Sané, in my opinion, is slowly beginning to elevate himself to the level of a Ribéry or a Robin. And I'm not saying in terms of his legacy or that he's already at that level. I mean in the sense that the way that Bayern used to rely on those players, they could throw the ball out wide to them and they would know that they would consistently do something with it. That's the kind of form that Sané has been in for the last kind of 6 months or so. But that midfield, I feel, was the real kind of, you know, it felt to me like the real kind of engine of how Bayern were able to dominate Dortmund. And, you know, because if Bayern have a striker like Harry Kane who can just drop in and become the de facto playmaker, it means they can just have Leimer and Goretzka just being the runners all day, every day. The two of them are just quite happy being number eights, box-to-box players. And I don't think it was a coincidence that we saw maybe Goretzka's best performance of the season, in my opinion. I'm struggling to remember one like it in 2023 in general. And it was exactly what you want to see from Goretzka, where he's marauding around the pitch, dominating the ball, off and on the ball, but also somehow making his late runs. And, you know, he almost scores an overhead kick, for goodness sake, at one point. So I think that's really interesting because I did see quite a lot of Bayern fans, like, you know, I go on the Reddit forum quite a lot just to kind of see what the kind of pick up the temperature of the Bayern fans and our subscribers as well, talking in our chat as well, saying, you know, that partnership worked so well. You have to question whether it actually makes sense to bring Kimmich back into the team and take Leimer out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I'd go quite that far. I totally agree with everything you said, and we said earlier that this is where the game was won and lost. Bayern's midfield being the leagues above that of Borussia Dortmund. If I can just flesh out an argument that Seb made, or a point that he made after the game with a bit of evidence, I suppose. He talked about how he thought it was the first time that he'd seen Kane operating in proper chemistry, with proper automatisms in this Bayern team, like a really, really well-drilled and well-trained and well-gelled unit. And one example of that would be that each time Kane did drop back into that midfield, or even deeper or pick up balls, Goretzka would immediately replace him in the number 9 position, effectively. That's how flexible he was. So I thought that was, really good to see. Musiala and Coman did it on occasion as well. Coman perhaps being slightly forgotten in his performance, but he did notch another assist. And when I was speaking to Upamecano, I think he was sticking up for his French colleague. So it was a bit of French solidarity. But he made the point to me as well, saying, "Don't forget Kingsley today as well. He played really, really well. He didn't get a goal, but he's doing well." So yeah, I think that was a fair point. And but whether I'd go so far as to say Kimmich has a battle to regain his place midfield, not quite sure about that, as well as Konrad Leimer did play. I think Konrad Leimer is an absolutely valuable and solid squad player for Bayern Munich. I remember the last time that I was in Munich, admittedly I wasn't there in the work capacity, I was watching United get absolutely torn apart by them. It was Konrad Leimer doing the business down the wing, which probably says more about United's lack of pace than Konrad Leimer, but that just shows how versatile Leimer is, and I think that's important. And he, again, take nothing away from him. On Saturday, he did have a very, very good game, and the fact that he can fill in at the fullback position as well is also important. So, not quite sure if he's keeping Kimmich out of the team just yet, but not a bad option to have.
Yeah, absolutely. He has been such a good utility player. I was doing some TV work post match the game, and they asked me about Leimer, and I kind of said, look, aside from maybe Harry Kane and Leroy Sané, I think he'd probably be Thomas Tuchel's pick for Bayern player of the season right now, just because of the way he's filled in for that team in so many ways. And
absolutely really vital for any squad, I think. And that's take nothing away from it. Absolutely vital.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The last of the major sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. All the hoops betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Anyway, that's probably enough time on that game. And for the sake of Dortmund fans everywhere, we should probably move on to another team who performed just as poorly, if not worse. Matt, and let's dive into RB Leipzig right now, because They lose 2-0 at the weekend to Mainz, a Mainz side who had very recently departed with Bo Svensson, head coach who'd resigned earlier last week. I didn't get a chance to watch this game. From the match reports I have read of it, it didn't sound like it was a classic, an extremely entertaining 90 minutes of football. From the stats I can see, it was a kind of... it was a match in which Mainz just about did enough to win this game against the poor Leipzig side, but it wasn't just a one-off result because, of course, Leipzig get knocked out of the Pokal a few days before this. And, you know, it's unfortunate that this kind of all gets kind of contextualized around Bayern beating Dortmund, because then people start kind of grasping for who can be challengers, and it doesn't help the Leipzig losing on the same day. But, you know, that's two defeats there for Leipzig in a row. What do you think has gone wrong there? And look, if you think it's just a one-off, of course you can say that and say, let's not get carried away. But it felt like a very kind of, well, it was a poor performance, no doubt about it, but it felt just so lackluster.
Yeah, they certainly lost their way a little bit in the past week. Obviously, having won the cup 2 years in a row, the last thing they would be expecting would be to be knocked out in the second round away at Wolfsburg, away at Mainz on Saturday. There were a lot of changes as well, and I wonder if the very fact that Michael Hoser made a few changes, particularly Baumgartner starting in there in place of Werner, whether that sort of exposed just how big the wholesale changes were in the squad in summer. I think we were all full of praise for Rosa and how he'd managed to compensate for some high profile departures and really bed in some of his new starters, particularly Xavi Simons and Openda obviously as well. But of course now it seems that once you do start making a couple of changes to that, perhaps they're not quite yet as bedded in as perhaps we'd all assumed. And I don't think that's a massive criticism either, given how many, given the caliber and the profile of players that they lost. However, they were unusually blunt and sloppy going forward against Mainz. Not helped obviously by the fact that Mainz, and again, totally understandably, I think, set up in one of the most defensive postures which I've seen of any Bundesliga team this season, and obviously that has a lot to do with their own circumstances at the moment, and we'll get onto them afterwards with the departure, stepping down of Bo Svensson. But RB struggled to break them down. I can only really recall a couple of half-hearted Xavi Simons efforts in the first half. Openda was dragged out wide, probably far more often than he would have liked. I thought Campbell, who took over the armband for this game, was a bit anonymous. Perhaps that was a little bit. Maybe he didn't deal with the responsibility as well as he could. Xaver Schlager, on the other hand, was probably still RB's best player. Typically combative and aggressive presence in midfield. And again, I think, sort of similar to Lima, actually. I'm not just saying because they're both Austrian, but they play such a sort of stabilizing and like combative role in their respective midfields, but they don't necessarily offer the creativity going forward, which perhaps the likes of an Emil Forsberg or previously a Dominik Szoboszlai would have offered. Difficult day out for RB. I would temper it a little bit. I think there's no getting away around the fact that it's obviously a bad week. I think that's the results speak for themselves. But I was struck by a line in the Kicker match report about this game where I had to read it twice and three times to make sure I understood it. When they said, just like in previous years, it's another bad defeat against Mainz, and this time it's left them 8 points off the top and once again out of the title race. I thought, it's 24 games to go, And the 8 points behind Bayer Leverkusen, they're 6 points behind Bayern Munich. I wouldn't write them off just yet. as much as it's obviously been a bad week.
Yeah, it seems a little preemptive to, you know, start chiseling Bayern Munich's name into the league title just yet, even if it's more than likely, as is often the case in German football. I thought the really interesting thing from this, and you're absolutely right, I completely agree with your kind of breakdown of the game, was you know, Schlager after the match saying, look, that's two games in a row we've now played where we've struggled to beat a defensive side, you know, a very kind of defensive, kind of, you know, rigid back line, or I guess you could say like two banks of you know, four, etc., etc. And I think that's a really interesting kind of admission from him, because I mean, if you look at that kind of lineup that Leipzig put out like in the Mainz game, you could argue there's only three attacking players in that entire starting 11. You know, they've also got Openda, Baumgartner, and Xavi Simons, but then it's a 3-4-3, and they've got the four is obviously David Raum and Benjamin Henrichs, who, look, of course, they're very good fullbacks, wingbacks, if you will, and they've been picking up assists and goals this season, but at the end of the day, they're still defenders. And then obviously Schlager and Kevin Campbell are both, you know, I'd say Campbell's more of a kind of holding number six, and Schlager's obviously a bit more of a kind of ball winner, who can also play as a, you know, a deep line player as well. And of course, three central defenders. And I completely agree with you. It felt very much like a game in which we did see how Leipzig may struggle without the players that they have moved on, because you can completely understand why a Dominik Szoboszlai line in the middle of the park would have made a difference. You can completely understand why a Christopher Nkunku would have been so crucial in this kind of game where space in the opposing box is so small. But also, Josko Gvardiol, who, you know, obviously a defender, but he played such a good playmaking role in this mm-hmm. Leipzig side, and he was so good at kind of you know, breaking the lines with really smart passes up to the front line. And so it's almost like through the entire team, they were missing people who could unlock stubborn defences, which clearly wasn't the case in this game. And I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing, but I'm really struck by just how quickly Xavi Simons has become the main man in this Leipzig team. You know, it's maybe not a bad thing, because he's obviously such an outstanding player, and from week to week, he seems to be adamantly determined to do everything he can while he's at Leipzig. And even in this game, you know, he had came very close to scoring a couple of times, but it maybe says a lot about just how thin the margins were between Leipzig just starting this season in utter chaos, because if they hadn't managed to pick him up, and you then factor in the fact that Danny Olmo's now out as well, you're really struggling to see where anything at all really in terms of creative output in this team's coming from. And that's obviously
They're the three key absences, aren't they? Obviously, Szoboszlai and Nkunku having moved on, and Olmo being injured. It's a massive, massive hole in there. And then you like the reliance on the Xavi Simons, who, as outstanding as he's been this so far this season, you probably can't put it all on him. But then to an extent, I also think, yeah, everything is all, it's always a bit of a knife edge with Red Bull, isn't it? And I think maybe that's a bit of a, if you take into context the bigger picture, it's almost a nature of the beast. And I think in previous seasons, you can look back on a reliance on Timo Werner, I think perhaps before the Chelsea intermezzo, and then in subsequent years, a reliance on the genius of Nkunku. Again, players moved on, or perhaps in the first season, how brilliant Naby Keita was, again, then moved on. This is very much the nature of the beast, I think. These players are, they're built, developed and brought through and put in the starting lineup, and it seems to be that ultimately you have to put them into the shop window and then move them on and then bring through the next batch. The latest of which we're now seeing, which inevitably leads to quite a lot of responsibility being put on the shoulders of relatively young and inexperienced players. And when it comes off, it's fantastic. When it was fantastic football and it's exhilarating. But when it doesn't, it exposes some of the gaps in the system. And I think that was the case. That was the case this week, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. They do have a kind of tricky run coming up. They've got a relatively straightforward fixture in the Champions League this week, which we would expect them to win and just about, you know, cement their spot in the last 16. But
they are away, though, aren't they? It's in Belgrade, which, I mean, it's absolutely, from personal experience, not a not an easy place to go, surely.
Fair point. Yeah, fair point. Absolutely fair point. I was going to make note of the fact that they then have Freiburg and Wolfsburg coming up after that, which are obviously no pushovers. Even if Freiburg did their very best to look like pushovers this weekend, and then they have Manchester City in the Champions League. So, you know, it will be interesting to see how Rosa kind of deals with this. You know, I think on the whole, he's done a really good job at Leipzig. I think, you know, look, he's very comfortable there. He knows how the system works. He's probably the best man for the job in terms of dealing with a high turnover of players and, you know, and also integrating the players that arrive from their other kind of the sister clubs or feeder clubs, if you will. But from match day to match day, that's kind of where he earns his wages, isn't it, Matt? He has to kind of figure out a way that, like, I basically lost my three main playmakers and goal scorers in Kunku, Szoboszlai, and of course Daniel Mo injured. And if he can figure out a way to kind of get more kind of attacking intent into that team, and rather than just relying on Xavi Simons to perform miracles week in, week out, then we could see them drop quite a lot more points against Freiburg and Wolfsburg coming up.
Yeah, nevertheless, I wouldn't be writing them off with so long to go, and particularly with them out of the cup now. I think that's a slight distraction perhaps out of the way. I'd agree with you regarding Marco Rosa. I think I wouldn't be worrying too much despite it being a bad week.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap things up with one final team.
Do you want to touch on Mainz briefly?
Of course,
probably worth a mention. It's quite a difficult week for them. Bo Svensson stepped down, didn't he? Voluntarily after the cup defeat away at Hertha. By all accounts, I was listening to Christian Heidel, the director of sport. And he said that, you know, the text message was sent by Svensson to him and sporting director Martin Schmidt in Berlin that night. And they spent quite a few hours in Svensson's hotel room in Berlin before making the decision. And if you have a look at the video message that Svensson recorded on Mainz's official media channels, you can find it on YouTube and whatnot. It's very, very emotional. He said that apparently it wasn't the first time that he'd suggested internally that he just couldn't see how he was going to start, you know, keep up providing these impulses for the team. And apparently this time there was no more convincing him. Very emotional. Yeah. Video, 2-minute message that he published in addressing the Mainz fans. On match day there was a lot of support. And there were chance of Bo Svensson's name. I think after the game, Jan Sievert, who has stepped up as interim coach from the second team and took charge, he dedicated the win to Svensson. Said it wasn't his win; it was Bo Svensson's win. And very understanding comments as well from the general Mainz landscape around the club. I think it's quite typical of the way Mainz operate as a club. I thought it's quite refreshing. I think there's a lot of respect for Svensson's decision, understanding, and they're still standing behind him. Heidel even said that, you know, I'm sure we'll see Bo Svensson coaching in the Bundesliga, maybe even back with us in Mainz. I think that's the sort of club they are. And I thought that was quite refreshing to see. Also, quite a nice touch of the way they won the game, particularly in the way they finally came out their shell a little bit in the second half, having been so defensive in the first half with five at the back. They came out a bit second half and, scored, particularly the first goal where Karim Onisiwo was broken down the right and crossed. Very, very Bo Svensson goal. So I think Jan Sievert has probably got a point when he said he didn't have to change that much. I think we said a couple of weeks ago when we talked about Mainz, they weren't necessarily playing that bad. This was very much a Bo Svensson team, which got a good result, despite the fact that Bo Svensson had stepped down. So I think, quite a refreshing way to go about things in Mainz. As always, I think they're a good club.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Bo Svensson a few times, and he's a very nice guy, very, very modest, because the last time I spoke to him, it shows how quickly things changed. It must have been start of last season when he was being linked with a number of jobs in the Premier League because, you know, he'd got Mainz flying up the table. And, you know, and even then he was very modest. He's like, look, this isn't because of me, it's because of the players and et cetera, et cetera. And they have had a very roller coaster couple of years under him where, and that's just the nature of Mainz, I suppose. But, you know, it's worth mentioning as well that Manu did write a blurb on Mainz in our Monday Bulletin newsletter and talked about Jan Sievert possibly being a potential long-term replacement to Bo Svensson. So I think that'll be definitely an interesting one to keep an eye on and to see whether, you know, that performance was just a case of the players realising that they had to put in a bit more effort for the sake of Bo Svensson kind of falling on his sword, or whether that kind of change in management will actually make a difference long term.
But yeah, it's interesting. I think after profile, it wasn't quite the assist. Oh no, it was. Yeah, from on the CEO, he said that he intends to go for a coffee at some point with Svensson in the coming week. I mean, that's how close they are. And I think he owes a lot of his. Yeah, I mean, he's been a key player for Mainz in recent years. Interesting too. I hadn't actually realised until this morning. He's actually stepped down from the Austrian national team, hasn't he? Karim Onuzewo. Yeah, decided he reckons he's too old and his body can't handle the rhythm, the week to week rhythm anymore. And he needs the international breaks off. And apparently that has been done. In agreement with Ralf Rangnick. And so yeah, that was a little interesting side to him, but really good run down the right and good cross for the goal. Typical Knights, really.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of, I think it was the first goal that was very much one of those kind of great counterattacks where
really good header as well. Yeah,
yeah, you know, you could argue that both Lukebo and Simikhan are both maybe not making the strongest effort to get back into place, and ultimately, Simikhan kind of gets caught completely under the ball. I think he actually slips at one point as well. But great counter-attacking goal and great scenes to see that for the Mainz fans. But I do kind of want to move on to Leverkusen briefly, Matt, before we wrap things up, just because I know we talked about them last week. But Hoffenheim, they travelled to Hoffenheim the weekend. They went 2-0 up at half-time. Disaster struck in the second half. Two goals in 2 minutes from Hoffenheim, but Xavi Alonso's side still managed to kind of pull the rabbit out of the hat here and stay top of the table, pick up 3 points. We both watched this game, so it's probably worth us just kind of breaking down what happened, what we thought of the performance, and, you know, people, like we said about Leipzig, it's maybe not fair to contextualize all this after, what, 10 or 11 games, but people will be looking at what happened to Dortmund the weekend, and then for neutrals of the league, they'll be placing all their chips on Leverkusen at this point, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be two schools of thought coming out of this. Obviously, Hoffenheim 2, Leverkusen 3, and just to go through it quickly, Leverkusen go 2-0 up in the first half, really, really dominant, and it's just, you think, same old, fantastic combinations between Victor Boniface and Florian Wirtz, and another fantastic finish from Alejandro Grimaldo. And you're thinking, yeah, this is a Leverkusen stroll into another big win. But then within about 5-6 minutes of the second half, they've conceded two. Kind of shocking Lucas Fredeschi error. An error on the ball from Granit Xhaka as well, which leads suddenly it's 2-2. And you're thinking, okay, this is very, very un-Leverkusen. We've not seen this before. And it's this, yeah. Along with the set piece weakness, which we discussed about in recent weeks, there's another issue that they have. Maybe they're not quite the finished product that we all thought they were, and they've collapsed a bit here. However, another Grimaldo effort later in the second half. They've regrouped and managed to get a really important win. So, which way do you read it? Do you read it as proof that Leverkusen are nowhere near the finished product yet? Still lots of things to work on. Or do you read it as yet another quality, yet another string to Leverkusen's bow, even when they're struggling, they recover from setbacks. So, but yeah, how do you read it, Stefan?
So, I'm tempted to give Leverkusen the credit here just because I thought they were completely dominant in the first half for the most part. And, you know, they went in at half-time and I did think, you know, this is a really professional performance. They've come up against a very good Hoffenheim team and they've managed to really pick them apart. In particular, that Florian Wirtz goal in the first half, which...
It's really good. I know we see this every week, goals involving Florian Wirtz being really good. But yeah, just watch it. He's so good.
Yeah, I know. And I kind of... I admittedly performed the cardinal sin of comparing him to Lionel Messi in the newsletter Monday. Just in the sense that...
That's flattering Messi, that.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it was just the way he glides by players and does those quick 1-2s, and you know, Boniface in particular was just, the two just have such a great kind of chemistry with one another. But I mean, it's the second time in as many weeks we've seen Wirtz just pick out, or just, I mean, the goal he scored last weekend was maybe a bit more individual, but the way that he's able to find space in the box where other players just can't even, you know, comprehend it. That's what makes me think of Lionel Messi. But I'm not really saying Florian Wirtz is like Lionel Messi, because I don't really think that's fair on anyone. But the way that he's able to play those 1-2s, and the way that he was able to kind of jink by defenders in the goal he scored last week, it's very reminiscent of players like Messi in that regard. And, you know, I wrote about him actually for the Monday newsletter, and how he's actually averaging like 1.36 goals and assists per 90 minutes, which is just bonkers, and you know, 66 minutes per goal or assist in all competitions. His numbers are just crazy at the moment. They're just absolutely crazy. And you could argue that he's maybe the difference between Leverkusen dropping points and being maybe third or fourth right now and still being top. But I think people might look at this game and think, oh well, you know, Leverkusen just squeezed by, you know, skin of their teeth or whatever. But I think if you actually look at the nature in which Hoffenheim scored those goals, one was obviously a complete mistake from Herdecke, and the other one was just a remarkable shot. I can't remember who actually hit the shot, and it hit off the post, but you know, it's a long range speculative shot.
Max Beyer, obviously.
He's obviously making a bit of a habit of that this season, isn't he?
Having a fantastic season.
And then obviously Weghorst taps home the easiest goal he'll score all season. I felt like those two goals were a little out of character of how the game was going on the whole. And then, you know, as we talked about actually in terms of how Leverkusen responded in that Bayern game, they did much the same in this game, where Grimaldo eventually, who's been outstanding this season, he's been so, so good, scores an excellent goal when he links up with Boniface as well. So I am tempted to kind of say Leverkusen had this game done and dusted, disaster struck, and then again they showed that capacity to just kind of get their heads down and pick up the result. And I think that's something that has been obviously missing from Leipzig. It's something that Dortmund weren't really capable of, obviously, against Bayern Munich. And, you know, I think it's all good news for Leverkusen. The only thing that makes me kind of wonder how far this Leverkusen team can go right now is that they haven't yet been struck down by any big injuries. You know, we talked about how Leipzig are struggling with Dani Olmo being missing.
They're still missing Patrick Schick.
They've learned to live without him 12 months ago.
Exactly. It's an absentee, which I'd actually forgotten about, but he was meant... The commentator, and there's no disrespect to Patrick Schick, but the commentator mentioned him in the Leverkusen Hoffenheim game and said, I think he said that Victor Boniface was really stamping his mark on the starting 11 in place of Patrick Schick. I sort of thought, I've completely forgotten that Patrick Schick was there. I mean, this is Victor Boniface's world. He's been out for so long.
And it's worth mentioning that he did come back and picked up another injury last week. Yeah. So it's a real shame, and it looks like he's going to be for a long time, unfortunately. He's just having a horrible time, and you hope he gets back soon. But if you look at that starting 11 that Leverkusen put out against Hoffenheim, you got Herdecke, who hasn't missed a minute of football in the Bundesliga. You've got Kosanu, who's only missed maybe one game, I think, or didn't play the full 90. Jonathan Tah hasn't missed a minute. Tapsoba hasn't missed a minute. Grimaldo and Frimpong both played ever-present. Xhaka, ever-present. Palacios has only missed one half of football in the Bundesliga so far this season. Hoffman's played the full time. Boniface has played the full time. And Florian Wirtz only missed one game. I think he was benched after the Europa League game a few weeks ago and then came on and did tremendously well. I think that was a Wolfsburg game. So, long story short, Xabi Alonso has basically been able to play the exact same starting 11 from match day one to where we are now. And the only way I can really see this Leverkusen team beginning to falter is one of these key players picks up a big injury, or, you know, a Hoffman, a Florian Wirtz, a Boniface just completely go off form and there's not really someone in there to step in for them.
Absolutely. Yeah, a long way to go, and that could still come back to bite them, particularly because they're still looking good to progress in the Europa League, and obviously they got as far as the semis last season, so I'm sure Xabi Alonso will have his eye on that as well to an extent. They're progressing in the cup as well. I had a Cologne fan text me over the weekend saying, like, for God's sake, we're going to get relegated. Leverkusen are going to win the treble, aren't they? I don't know, maybe that says something more about the depressive attitude in Cologne these days. But yeah, Leverkusen do have that really, really busy schedule to come all season. And yeah, like you said, be interested to see how Xabi Alonso deals with any potential injury setback. Not that we... would wish that on any of the players or on Alonso and his squad, but it happens. I think one last little point I'd like to make. Oh, actually, first thought on Alonso, maybe just an aside, but Xabi Alonso speaks very good German for someone who's not been in the country that long. Clearly making rapid progress. He's been doing his press conferences in very, very, very broken German since day one. It's actually been quite frustrating, with all due respect, to listen to him, but he's been trying. But I was listening to some of his comments to various media outlets after Saturday's game, and he's now at the point where he's holding very competent and good conversations with interviewers in absolutely acceptable German. So I think a nice little aside that shows, I think probably shows a lot about the mentality of the man, and clearly quite an intelligent operator. And similarly on interviews and maturity, another side to Florian Wirtz. We all know we talked about how brilliant he is as a player on the pitch, but I was listening to an interview with him yesterday, where it was the first time I've really listened to him speak so much, clearly. I don't think he does that many interviews, or maybe I've just missed them. And I thought really mature analysis. He spoke really clearly about those sort of 10-15 minutes after half time, where he said that we clearly lost our grip on the opponents, and he was referring to how the distances between Leverkusen defenders and Hoffenheim attackers had got noticeably bigger, which suddenly gave Hoffenheim a little bit more space. So I thought it was interesting that at such a relatively young age that he notices that, he articulates that, and he's I thought it was a really mature post-match analysis from Florian Wirtz as well. So some really interesting developments around Leverkusen.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten the impression from speaking to people at the club that he has his head kind of screwed on properly, which, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but there are countless examples of players as talented or promised to shine as bright as him one day that do get kind of led astray, and it seems as though he's very kind of level-headed. His dad seems to help him make his business decisions and his career decisions, and you know, he certainly wasn't one chomping the bit to move to Barcelona or Real Madrid as soon as he started playing well for Leverkusen. He seems to be taking his time in his development, so that's only good news for Leverkusen and the German national team, I would say. But yeah, Alonso's an interesting one too. Actually, I do remember when he was at Bayern Munich as a player, the club made a big deal about him learning German. I think it was him and Xavi Martinez, and you know, you saw these press releases about the two of them sitting in a class doing their German classes, and you kind of roll your eyes thinking, yes, okay, Bayern, we get it, you know. Everyone has to speak German. It's very typical German football. Only industry in Germany, it seems, where they demand that everyone speaks German anymore. But
that's true, actually, yeah.
But, you know, I do just wonder whether this is him just getting back up to speed after obviously forgetting about it for 4 or 5 years when he went back to Spain, or if he has been kind of sticking with it and when he was out of the country. But I'll actually be at Leverkusen's next game. I'm off to see them against Union Berlin on Sunday. So,
we can do the podcast together then, can't we? I'll be there as well.
Yeah, we can.
So we'll keep an eye on Leverkusen.
He's been practicing his English as well, and then he can pick up on my thick Scottish accent.
He definitely will. Definitely will be able to understand you. No chance. I'm struggling right now.
Yeah, well, it'll be a test for him. Maybe the biggest test he's had this season. But that's probably a good place to wrap things up, Matt, as we tick over the hour mark. as always, a big thank you for coming on the show. I know Manu does this week to week to see what social media you're using at the moment, but anything you want to plug, feel free to go and do so now.
No, nothing massive. Just, I mean, if anyone's interested for, I suppose, even more Dortmund Bayern content, my piece from Saturday is on my social media channels, on Twitter and Blue Sky. I've based it around my chat with Dio Pamecano. Came across as a really, really nice lad, really friendly. I think it obviously helped. I don't know how well he speaks English or German, but we did the interview in French, and he seemed a lot more comfortable with that. And he made a very friendly impression. And some good comments about the game. So I've based my piece around that. And I also seem to have upset some Newcastle fans because of it's not me that said it, but by all accounts, Borussia Dortmund's travelling support didn't have the best impression of Newcastle. So that's again, don't shoot the messenger. I like Newcastle as a city personally. Spent a lot of time up there in the past. Think it's great.
Yeah, well there we go.
So don't shoot the messenger.
Friends and alienate people. The Matt Ford story. Make friends with Meccano, but distance yourself from the entire fan base. I'm sure as a Man United fan, you won't lose much sleep over it.
I'll survive.
Yeah, you'll survive, absolutely. But yeah, that's all we have time for. As always, this show is in association with Bet Online. And yeah, until next time, thanks very much, and we'll speak to you guys soon.
Cheers.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.